From a distance, peace looks soft. In reality, it's one of the most strategically powerful forces. Just it's expressed differently than domination or control. We know that empires are built on force, collapse. Systems are built on trust, endure. Music has trust in it. Interaction by playing has trust in it. And this endurance is manifested at the level of the self and others. A peaceful individual through playing creates, builds, collaborates. That's exponential power.
As a CIA officer in Iraq during the war, I lived in a world where power meant weapons, money, and force. And yet, I kept encountering a deeper power. Policies changed, governments shifted, military plans often failed, but connection to each other, to the earth, and to something larger than ourselves kept proving more powerful than violence and destruction. I'm Janessa Gans Wilder, and this is Peace is Power, a podcast exploring how peace will change your life and our world. Each week, I speak with leaders, artists, activists, and spiritual thinkers around one core question. What if true power is not domination, but connection? Welcome to Peace is Power. Welcome to today's conversation, which brings together two formative forces in my life, Iraq and music. I spent 21 months in Iraq during the war, surrounded by the sounds of sirens, helicopters, and explosions, and I longed for the harmony music can bring. I'm also a lifelong violinist. In my family, our mantra was, "The family that plays together stays together." And family get-togethers were all hands-on-deck jam sessions. And now with three kids in a Paris conservatory, I love that this appreciation for music is being handed down. I notice it's teaching them to listen better, to listen for harmony, and to be part of making that harmony. So it was such an honor to welcome Maestro Karim Wasfi, a renowned cellist, composer, conductor of the Iraqi National Symphony Orchestra, and a global ambassador for peace. Karim has performed at the United Nations and in great halls around the world, but perhaps most powerfully, after car bombs exploded in Baghdad, he brought his cello to that very site and played what he calls an act of reclaiming space for humanity. In this conversation, we talk about the power of music, about Iraq, about healing, the importance of culture, and that peace is the most powerful force we have. Here's my conversation with Maestro Karim Wasfi. Welcome, Karim. So nice to have you here. I'm going to start with just a couple highlights. You are a renowned cellist, conductor of the Iraqi National Symphony, a composer, and a global ambassador for peace. And I just want to say how honored I am to be with you because you embody two things that are so important and formative to me in my life, and that is music and Iraq. So it is a real, real privilege to welcome you, Maestro Karim Wasfi. How are you?
Thank you, ma'am. I'm good. I appreciate it. My dear colleague and freedom fighter, I would call you.
And a fellow musician. I didn't say that we're both fellow musicians.
We still have to have an impromptu at some point.
I am looking forward to our duet. So this morning it will be a duet of words, but I just want to say I just finished listening to one of your performances at the United Nations and you didn't announce the piece, so I don't even know what it was, but it was so powerful. And it made me think, Maestro, of all the different places that you have played and the different audiences you've played in front of. But I want to begin with one of the most unforgettable, and that is after a car bomb took place in Baghdad, you brought your cello to that exact site and played. And I would love to know what moved you to do that.
To reclaim space for humanity, it was a clear message of a connection to life, connection to being, dedication and determination towards creating life versus the impending doom of uncertainty that different and improvised ways of death were experimented and executed there. So it was to reclaim space for humanity, for the individual. I believe art is not ornamentation, culture is not peripheral. It was a way to share and emphasize that art and culture are both ontological necessities, if I will, the necessity to experience self and also to empower civility versus surrendering to uncertainty and fear, which terror does and radicalization has manifested in different ways in Iraq and the world, actually. So it was a clear message of perseverance, dedication, connection, communication, and manifestation of civility for everyone to share the elements of action versus reacting to fear and uncertainty.
And I love how you just phrased it in terms of creating space for that, creating space for life.
Reclaiming the space, meaning how IEDs, improvised car bombs, different things that we witnessed and we've experienced for years, as well as sirens, those were evident present elements of a certain path and certain ideology. And I believe they have to be overcome by what we do. So it was, apart from reclaiming space, it was also a manifestation of connectivity and how we can identify beauty as manifestation of continuity and adaptation based upon a solid foundation of action.
So I want to delve into that a little bit deeper because you also do, I think, a lot of work with sound. And I would love to know more about if that's through your compositions, but I know that sound is an important thing to you. And so you going to that exact physical site, and in a way, not just reclaiming the space, but reclaiming sound. As a musician, what have you seen? Is there power to introducing a sound in a space? And how have you seen that? What is sound healing? You know, what is the point of sort of reclaiming those sounds?
Harmony, alignment, belief. It creates loyalty somehow. Sustains movement. It adds clarity.
Because of that alignment, you mean, or?
Because of frequency and how it connects and how it interacts with even our brain, you know, the alpha, beta, theta, delta, and gamma waves that we have. But other than that, it's the connection that is created beyond the physical realm. There's truth into it. As much as there's truth in noise, there's truth in harmony. And sharing harmony through alignment to frequency, it creates connection to self at the core, as much as it creates this connection to the others at the core. And I feel this in conducting as well. But when it comes to this single voice of individualism and how we create a harmonious orchestra of individuals, whether they're future leaders or an actual orchestra, we are orchestrating the alignment and the harmonious coalescence, if you will, towards continuity and towards continuity with self and with the others, even if we disagree.
Exactly. And you've studied physics, and I am not a physicist, but even at the most basic level, I can feel the difference between a siren going off, the sound of an IED going off, and what it does inside me. How jarring it is, how terrifying it is, how it sets off the nervous system versus hearing you play the cello or, you know, being in a concert hall. You know, the sound reverberates in me very differently.
See, where sound heals, language speaks, and then peace begins.
Wait, unpack that. So you have to have first the sound and then the language, or what do you mean by that?
First sound and then when it heals, or there's a continuation of this connection to self, different layers of self, and then to different layers of others. And it is a tangible outcome of how we connect to self, how we act, interact, react, and then connect to others. I believe my concept of the poetic prologue towards connection of sound to how it's manifested, whether through an instrument or language, the healing element of sound is there by nature. When frequency is sensed harmoniously and it creates this equilibrium within self, then that can be manifested through playing and connecting sound to others.
My music teacher would love this, Maestro, because she used to say, my music teacher in college, Janessa, we're not in the music business, we're in the healing business.
I love it. I love it. And in every culture, the pulse of rhythm and the breath of language, it does, you know, it carries a story over shared humanity. You know, word harmonize with music, that is also palpable and obvious. But we form bridges with sound when we play. And when we share that, whether it's a conflict zone or a divided community or at the level of the self, this initiates a certain layer of truth that in many cases, I believe it gets into a vague layer of uncertainty due to conflicts and due to disagreement. Through sound and through action, the point is acting and playing, as I said, is the individual or the collective coalescence of us.
You're transforming the sound, you mean, through that action.
So you transform sound into an element of connectivity and interdependence.
Hey, listeners, if you're wanting to go deeper in your peace-building journey, come visit us at euphrates.org. Euphrates Institute is the organization I founded after my time serving in Iraq during the war. We offer courses, resources, and a global community of peace builders from more than 60 countries who are learning how to practice peace within and without. You can learn more at euphrates.org. So let's get into how you do that in practicality, because, and I want to explore this on multiple levels, because you are the conductor of a symphony of people in a very fractured society of different religions, different ethnicities, different genders, and you as the leader have to introduce or bring out that cohesion and that harmony, even in the midst of all those fractures. And I also imagine, Kareem, that you have a lot of fractured pressures from outside, from the society, that maybe they're extremists that don't want this experiment that you're doing to take place, or against even music. You know, there are so many ways that you must feel that pressure from outside. So how are you able to do that on all those levels?
I would turn this to peace again, within self and within the coalescence of us, this orchestra of the beehive of energy. From a distance, peace looks soft. In reality, it's one of the most strategically powerful forces. Just it's expressed differently than domination or control. We know that empires are built on force, collapse. Systems are built on trust, endure. Music has trust in it. Interaction by playing has trust in it. And this endurance is manifested at the level of the self and others. A peaceful individual through playing creates, builds, collaborates, attracts others as well towards the same. That's exponential power at the zero sum. This is at the level of the core. Peace also creates legitimacy and belief. A shared value of belief when we have a group of people transcending beyond the obstacles of disagreement and manifesting their connectivity through playing creates the elements of continuity that we aim for. And as a leader, I get the best in what people do. And I believe that's the difference between a leader and a boss or a director. I believe within the realm of leadership, getting the best in what people can offer and can share, and then connecting this to the cause and to the vision, creates this path of clarity and path of continuity, and sharing the means of achieving this, even if the values are different, even if the beliefs are not necessarily at the same level of...
But isn't there the shared value of seeking to create music or...
Absolutely.
In a way, you're saying that does become stronger than all the dividing factors that would tear people apart.
The foundation of this, absolutely, is the shared values, the value of acting towards civility and sharing that. But the way it can be jeopardized by all the elements of local and regional and maybe even global impacts of jeopardizing such belief, in many cases, these forces become lethal, and it endangers the belief system within self towards what we do. And ironically, in, as you well know also, in areas of despair, in areas of uncertainty, in areas of where civility is endangered and the humanity is endangered at the core, the action that the human aspect and dignity within self is affirmed through action. And this action, in our case, is playing music and connecting to self again and connecting to others. You know, in my journey, I have, and you know, we've spoken about this, you know, I've moved between grand concert halls and barrows of conflict zones. And I found art is not an embellishment of space, but its very foundation. You know, and I keep repeating culture to reiterate my message, even with colleagues in, you know, in orchestras. Culture is not auxiliary to survival. It is its articulation. We articulate surviving through what we do, and we, you know, we manifest that through music, classical or other genres. When communities are fractured by violence, what is destroyed is not only infrastructure, but the narrative, the identity, and the capacity of expression. And without art, as you say, there can be no true reconciliation. For healing requires voice, requires visibility, and requires beauty. And through music and through this coalescence, we do manifest that and we do share.
How, Karim, do you stick to that faith? How do you continue to play and promote even music and society when there are, I'm sure for you personally, I don't know if you've been threatened. I imagine you have, but...
Yes. Yes. Until recently, yes.
Wow. Where does that courage come from, the belief, the... Because, right, I think many of us, we're feeling so many obstacles. We're feeling so much extreme, you know, pressure and... burden, and it would be much easier to just give up and not go to the site where the bombing was like you did. It would be have been so much easier for you not to do that. And yet you continue to show up every day, day in and day out. Where does that drive come from? And how can we borrow some of your courage and some of that drive?
You know, when I think of preserving collective memory and sustain identity and foster the imaginative space where, you know, peace becomes possible, that creates and empowers and sustains and maintains belief. If we all choose wisely, I think we would agree upon the fact that peace is not merely the absence of war, but as a flourishing of culture, we dare to compose a future where beauty is the catalyst, where every individual has access to arts, to beauty at the level of self and the level of community, that empowers how I perceive this action and how I sustain it and maintain the necessity for it. So in other words, arts and general music in particular, of course, acquainted with, you know, education and knowledge and the right for education and knowledge. This empowers the need and empowers the ability within self to continue. We might have doubts and we might have our weak points. Hence, we need this connectivity and interdependence that I usually refer to. So where does courage come from? I don't claim to be the most courageous individual, but I have, through music and through playing, reached a level of the ability to continue and the ability to sustain and maintain, regardless of the uncertainty that we might encounter in some cases, and despite the endangering uncertainty that the others, the ugly radicals and the ugly extremists and the ugly terrorists would want to, because they're connected, the other side, and I keep calling it the other side, because I believe this is where we are at the moment, at this moment of what we're witnessing now, and we're witnessing the fourth generation of revolution beyond enlightenment, industrial agriculture, and now we have the scientific and you know, every element of it, to include artificial intelligence and this and that. There's more investment and there's more power in destruction and distraction from clarity. And this is not new. We've seen this since Adam and Eve, perhaps, or other stories or other natures of...
Yeah, it just takes on different mutations and different forms.
Exactly. So it seems to be an ongoing dispute, an ongoing path that requires, in some cases, adaptation, but it does require more belief. And the networking of the other side has been way more functioning and successful in creating uncertainty and fear.
Yes.
The networking of altruism and good doing is not always functioning. It's actually less functioning for a while.
And less funded and less supported, less legitimized, totally.
Hence, one of my pillars of belief was that this is not relevant to funding. This is not relevant to projects. This is not relevant to theories, that conferences. And no, this is a lifestyle. This is a trend. This is a mindset. Civility, good doing, and altruism or belief in goodness is a mindset. It's not a project. This is not a grant we get or a loan we get or some funding of some bank or some company. But if this does not occur, this is not the case.
We'd still do it.
We still do it. Exactly. At the personal level, at the immediate, at the family level, at the self, and then this hovers into other orbits of being, whether it's the family or the community. So again, I would relate to the concept of self within the parameters of arts and culture and education, as I said, are not peripheral. They're ontological necessity. And this is why I called my efforts peace through the arts and education. This was not an aesthetic gesture, but an existential imperative. In communities where trauma had metastasized, where the very grammar of hope seemed lost. And we all witnessed that in war zones and other parts, even in countries in the Occident where we thought that war is not anymore at our backyards. The most impactful element of war is the individual.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, the first enemy of self can be self or others before weapons, before even if AI reaches a level of controlling a fleet or controlling a sort of an armament, conceptualized, controlled, maybe a method of conquer, a functioning action of, you know, militarized armed action somewhere, human can be still the most disturbing, destabilizing factor of life. And by including education and art and music and sharing and functioning and executing, we create this paradigm shift. We shift the narrative. We change what can become the point of destabilization. We turn it into a point of continuation, of civility.
And reconnection is what it sounds like. In all this current milieu, whether it's AI or wars, there's so much attempt to separate ourselves from each other, from the collective, from ourselves. We don't even think for ourselves, oh, I'll just ask chat, you know, what do I think? And what you're saying is through culture and arts, we reconnect to ourselves and to each other and to what's true and to the whole. And I'd love to ask, Maestro, do you have a story that comes to mind where you have seen that, whether it's in your orchestra or with youth that you've worked with? What's a way that we can tangibly feel what you're expressing?
Oh, Janessa, I have tons of stories, books and chapters. But however, I'm glad you asked. It's something that reminded me with, I would refrain to mention graphic stories because the audience is not necessarily...
They're not used to living in Baghdad like you are.
Yes, or not as they have seen what we've witnessed. And you've been partially there as well.
Almost 2 years, yes.
Yeah.
We had my fair share.
And not necessarily only Baghdad, but other parts of that country, as well, even the Middle East. But I would mention something, two stories. At the midst of the end phase of fighting ISIS in Nineveh, I've decided again, apart from conference halls or concert halls or news, whatever, I've decided to grab my cello and get there. And I did. Maybe at some point I can probably even share some pics. And it was the most ironic and surreal scene you'd ever imagine. When some of these families have managed to walk out of Mosul. And this was very close to where operations were. I mean, you could see smoke and you could hear bombs too. And it was so surreal to the level that you would see individuals, different ages, walking with irrelevant elements of stuff they would have in the house, at the household. Could be a toy, a plate, a fan, an empty jar.
You mean they were fleeing their homes?
Yes. And I could see by how they looked, psychologically and physically, I could see what they have been through. It was so palpable and obvious. I could easily tell what they have been through. The fear, uncertainty, vagueness, delusion, illusions. Anyway, there's this young girl out of nowhere comes towards me, and we had soldiers around, and she gives me this hug. In my case, it was also relevant because there's this guy carrying a cello. You know, a hard case. Maybe it was also as surreal as what I was looking at. And apparently, you know, she gives me a hug and she says, thanks for what would be interpreted in English as a gratitude and the sign of appreciation for sharing humanity. And I said, where does this, I haven't done anything yet. You're fleeing and I'm perhaps also fleeing some sort of normalcy that we're experiencing, so-called normalcy, you know, into this war zone that I'm well aware of. And I have this insane idea of performing, but idea of sharing. It was sharing sound, and whether it was Bach or my own compositions as usual, sharing a different sound other than what they have heard, whether it was human sound, voice, or, you know, the sound of the noise of. And she said, no. I felt human because you shared sound before and you are going to do it because I can see your instrument. Apparently, she has seen something years earlier. And you're not only sharing food and blankets. This is literally what she said. You're not only sharing food because one of my messages and others as well that around the world that whom we share the same, I assume that we share the fact that this is a human need. It's not, human need is not limited to food and shelter. This is basic, but civility is also basic and it should be a human need, which includes education and music and culture and arts. More than bombs and a pistol to have a right to defend myself. We understand that, but I have the right to defend and I have the right to think and I have the right to be and I have the right to engage and to share. So she said that, and this was a striking statement while I was surrounded by everything other than arts. You know, a bomb is made to explode. We know that, to become what it is. It's either that or it is there as a defense. It's a defensive element. It doesn't explode, but it makes people think twice before attacking us. Fine. But to allow this insanity and a strange discrimination, I feel, in many cases between the Occident and the East, in which community is at the level of surviving how and why? Which cultures are surviving how and why? Which countries are considered third world countries, second world countries, first world country? Which countries are, which communities are sensing that living in our own silos somewhere, everything is safe, not knowing that in our backyard there could be a serial killer or a rapist that can actually function at the level of insanity of what we can see in third world countries through ideological warfare and belief systems that would encourage improvised ways of death, whether through religion or political ideologies and monopolization. And everything is used through this flourishing business of...
And violence takes so many forms. There might be more subtle and more egregious or more covered in the news or not, but it's pervasive throughout.
Absolutely. This was one little story of this hug I got from this young girl from Mosul, whom I haven't seen again, but I would love to see her again. And she had shared this, and there were soldiers, rockets, smoke. You could hear bombs, food from other parts of Iraq where people were bringing just how they do function through the pilgrimage. They were there from other parts of Iraq cooking for all these people fleeing and managed to leave the operation areas.
Can I just interject? Because this, I just want to acknowledge the power of what you just shared. Because, you know, we sometimes think, what can one person do? And she wasn't even the one doing this powerful act of sharing this music. She just recognized something. She saw something. And in her childlike innocence, in that wisdom, and she shared that with you. And you've probably shared this story many times. And so her simple act of acknowledgement of the power of music, of the expression of life that you were bringing, has now been shared out so many times, and the ripples have gone out. And so who are we to say that what we are doing when we take a stand for life and culture and in all its myriad forms doesn't have an impact? You know, I think so often we dismiss or we discount our potential ripples that we are sending out, whether it's through sound or through a hug or through a kind statement, that those also have impact. Those go out just as bombs, you know, ripple effects or that impact is felt, but maybe even more powerful is this simple statement that a child made to you. There's real power in that.
Absolutely. Certainly. And again, I submit that peace building must be reconceptualized. Artists must no longer be peripheral to diplomacy. They must be integral to it. Culture must not be the entertainment after the summit, but the strategy at its core. It is not a soft power, shy soft power. It serves collective memory, sustains identity. We foster imagination, imaginative spaces where peace becomes possible. You know, you do it to the violin, I've done it with the cello, I do it with the baton. And it doesn't need to be a job. It's a commitment. It's a mindset. And it is a commitment to the international community. It should be a commitment to the international community as well, at the level of the United Nations, at the level of governments, at the level of, and even beyond organizational United Nations. I respect UNESCO, UNICEF, everything else, but this is at the level of, we are at the level of our own species being endangered by uncertainty. What you see on daily basis, you know, whether it's the news or the social media in general, we need to share more good stories. We need to share more positive outcomes of what we do. Because most of what people are sharing is, you know, is relevant to troublesome conflicts. And this is not new. I think one of the major advanced elements of being recently is communication. The advancement of communication in recent years, at least the last decade or two, is way much more advanced than armament or maybe other elements of luck. And I'm not being a pessimist. I'm more of a realist in this regard. But what I'm advocating and what we're sharing and what we hope to share more is the fact that this is a mindset. It needs an organizational element into it. It needs it within functionality, within the education system, and within the community, the societal engagement, community outreach. But this is a mindset of how we choose to continue. Otherwise, we only have a means of annihilating each other and ourselves.
I think this is really key, Karim, because whether this takes shape through in some societies in the Middle East, you know, it's under the arts or under attack from extremism. Here in the West, it's the first thing to go to be on the chopping block in terms of budget cuts or the arts. There is an undervaluing and outright attacks in different parts of the world against the arts. And what you're saying about it starting with education, I've always referred to Plato's idea that the music was really the most pivotal part of education. And he said, being reared in music is of supreme importance because rhythm and harmony, more than anything else, sink into the innermost soul and fasten most powerfully upon her. And he was pointing out that through music, not only do we learn soul, rhythm, harmony, you know, those deeper things, but also we learn physics, we learn math. You know, it's like the left brain and the right brain come together in music. And so I would just love to hear from your vantage point at a time when we are pouring our investment, our attention, our energy into AI, into technologies, even into armaments that take up so much of our own budget as Americans. How do we support the arts? How do we reclaim its place as an engine of our survival, of our creativity, of our evolution as humanity? As you say, it shouldn't be peripheral. It has become peripheral. How would you say to the average person, yes, let's bring it back? Like, what can we do?
It's as simple as function. At the organizational level, there are ways to continue and there are ways to expand this spectrum of activities at the personal level, at the community level. And I think, I mean, we can discuss plans and, you know, the reality of functionality, but this has to do with how within the community we create this, you know, where people realize that peace is the moment when, you know, human begins moving from noise to harm, when each voice, like an instrument, finds its place in a greater composition. A community is so fragmented and distracted for many reasons, to include even funding and day-to-day issues. I would not dramatize the whole perspective. It's just by functioning and turning this element of expression into a mindset that we all share. And just like a church or a synagogue or a mosque or a Buddhist temple or a Baha'i temple somewhere, right? This becomes a cathedral of sharing, of expression, and of being. It doesn't have to be in a concert hall at an opera house somewhere. This is a community outreach. This is a societal mindset. And it can overcome the ideological manipulation of a mosque or of a church or of a synagogue, if any, beyond the Abrahamic religions even. I don't want to get into, you know, religious.
But what you're pointing to, Karim, I'm smiling because you're inviting us or encouraging us to find our own inner coherence and in a way to be musicians, to develop our own harmony, our own inner harmony, and to develop our...
attune our own instrument and tune in to self.
And then to play.
And then gradually play. And then this can turn into... this is very practical, by the way. It's extremely... it can be doable, and it's doable, and it can be shared. And we've done this in Baghdad, Mosul, partially Anbar.
What do you mean by it being practical? Like, how are you doing that with those communities?
So we have the oasis of, let's say, peace towards elements of coalescence and the disciples of believers here and there. And we would agree that at the weekend, at a certain point, it's just like doing Tai Chi somewhere or having a sort of a ritual. And it has nothing to do with anything. It's just basically creating harmonious sounds. And if there are no instruments, it would be humming. And if there are instruments, which we had at certain times, people will be sharing, and they don't have to be professional. It was about unity and about listening and deep listening, which is jeopardized and is actually missed at many levels in certain cultures. People were sharing deep listening and expression at the same time. This turned into a biweekly or a monthly event where people just share that, and it turned into a mindset where people can share that, especially the youth, the future leaders.
In an improvised way, you know, tuning into each other, listening, and then seeing what expression came out.
As improvised as life is, Janessa, because we wake up all of a sudden, 4 years old, 2 years old, or a prodigy somewhere, 5 years old, playing a strad, if if we come from a wealthy family, or scratching some piece of wood and
banging on the table.
Yes. But again, after all these years and being exposed to death, maybe more than life in my case, I'm trying for the last 4 years or so, I'm simplifying the whole notion of this mindset into organizationally, by the way. And this is not just the experimental level. This can be an organizational level within community outreach or societal outreach, community, not even reconciliation or tolerance. I don't even want to use the word tolerant. It's not about anything. It's just about sharing harmony in a most peaceful, elegant, civil, understanding, caring, and kind way. It's about sharing kindness. It's about sharing the ability and the force and the strength of expression without endangering the life of the opponent or self, or not allowing the opponent to endanger my own life based upon disagreement. It's just about sharing. It's about carrying instruments and sharing. It's about storytelling without words, without language, without yelling, without, we need silence and we need a sense of calm, and we need that breath that we just had experienced to connect to self, to your own frequency, to the now, based upon the memoir of what you have just been through. I bet you within the last 10 seconds, you've gone back and forth at least to your own self and other experiences that had been dangerous to self even at some point and had endangered your very core of being who you are. But you managed this breath.
And I felt my shoulders relax and... yeah.
Voila.
And realign. And
then you have a concrete foundation towards regenerating more cells and thinking clearer. Continue. I don't believe this as a project. This is a mindset. This is how we choose to be able to continue to label this death. Otherwise, we're just puppets of no... Otherwise, nothing has a meaning. Otherwise, we're just eating, reproducing, and we have to end our own lives, you know, before we know it. And we will allow fear and intimidation and a selective bias social structure to decide who stays alive and who doesn't.
So I would ask, and you sort of alluded to it just now, which prompts me to want to know more, in this current context in Iraq, where I believe Iraq's the only country that's being hit by both sides, both by U.S. missiles and attacks against the PMF and Iranian against the U.S. embassy. And so you're in the crossfire for sure. And then just for you, where you are career-wise, what do you feel emerging or calling to as a next chapter, a next step?
I would say violence can control a moment, but we will shape the future through peace. True power is not the ability to dominate others, but the mastery to remain centered, clear, and creative in the face of conflict. And we're facing conflict that's not limited to Iraq. I think our conflict is global, and the conflict is clear that has to do with how we choose to resolve disagreement. I know there's a certain concept of what's happening there. I understand the fear of what is being propagated by Iran for over a generation and even more. I understand the issue to some extent that chanting death to America every morning does not create a very friendly conceptualizing strategy uptown back in DC. I understand the rationale maybe, or the worry that is there in, you know, in the US, that if Iran is capable of developing what it's trying to develop, I understand that. It's sad that this was not resolved in a different way, but I also hold Iran responsible for not resolving this in a different way. It's not only for the U.S. that it had proven. There's obviously a conflict, and it's relevant to Israel as well. And this conflict was never resolved. And was there a way for the different parties involved in this to resolve this peacefully? I don't think it was peaceful even prior to the attacks. Because we've seen some actions in Israel, we've seen some actions in other parts of the world that were relevant to this disagreement. And it's endless. I mean, if you ask an Iranian, does Israel have the right to exist? And they would tell you, no, they have to be thrown in, you know, in some sea somewhere in the Middle East. I would understand why Israel is angry or worrisome or concerned about its own security. So this is a much deeper discussion, and it has to do, unfortunately, with an inevitable outcome of religious disagreement. But it has to do with interpretation. And this is my point of prioritizing education and awareness. Interpretation is the problem. Someone wrote something in religion 5,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago and had caused a certain turbulence. If we have people today still believing that we have to resolve our 2,000 years old disagreement through killing each other, then we are at a serious level of non-adaptation, non-civility.
And even religious disagreements can be a lens. You know, even underneath that, it's what is at the root? Is it fear? Is it the survival instinct? Is it the other? It's the belief of separation when we know we're interconnected and interdependent. So all those things, and that's why I appreciate you simplifying even, you know, basically, is it disharmony or harmony?
The new religion beyond even the Abrahamic religions, with all respect to all belief systems, the new religion should be harmony and equilibrium and coalescence. Otherwise, we're committing the same crime over and over and over and over for the last 23,000 years, perhaps even longer. I think the new religion should be harmony within self and with others. And that doesn't mean we all have to be the same. That's extremely, actually, it's boring. We can be different, but we can experience the way in which our harmony is a better path than our dissonance and disagreement, meaning we can disagree, but we can harmonize at the same time at a different level. We can coexist, we can be together, just like a healthy marriage or healthy relationship.
So as a final question for you, Kareem, apart from, which I want to encourage our listeners to do, find our own inner harmony and alignment and play our instrument in whatever form that is, what can we do to support your vision and your work?
Well, we can organize events. You can support us with instruments. You can support us with communication. You can support us with technology. We can support us each other in spreading the word. We can support each other in joint ventures towards spreading the word and spreading activities, co-finance. We can financially support each other in different parts of the world. We can declare at the highest level that we can choose, we can agree to choose even a day of silence and a day of peace every month. And we create a network towards achieving that, and to have, through technology perhaps, to have a monthly day of coalescence. And this is something I would really like to achieve and to call for, practical terms, to call towards achieving and executing, no matter which part, which continent, which wherever you are. I'm not going to wait for conferences and one performance here and there. No. And it does have to be Friday or Saturday or Sunday. It's beyond religions. It's beyond beliefs. It's beyond anything. It's just basically, no matter which time zone you're at, there's a certain hour where we can all connect and we can play instruments, not louder than the other, softer than the other, and listening to each other. And we can document that, and we can create this. If you really want to support me in this, spread the word that I want your help in choosing a global day of harmony and coalescence. And we manifest that. We do it. We execute it. We document it. And then we check what kind of alignment we create out of this globally, no matter what instrument you play and what language you speak.
And using technology as a way to, you know, instead of a divisive tool, that's a way that we connect, see what the other is playing and how we're harmonizing, and that connects us.
Yes. And this might be something new I'm creating, you know, a new machine. I have some ideas, but we need technology because we have tried also before to have these online concerts, and we always had technical issues. So this is a call even for tech. It could be MIT, it could be whoever. You know, instead of the new rocket, we can create together the new element of connectivity and sharing this through technology as a ritual.
I love that. And I just want to end with gratitude, Maestro, because, and this is what you started with, that peace is not soft. And I think you are such an amazing example of the arts, culture, peace being a form of power and courage that you yourself embody. I mean, amidst the threats, amidst the bombings and destruction, that you would personally take a stand of rebellion against that and defiance and courage to reclaim the space, reclaim the sound for a much deeper power. And I just commend and revere that spirit that animates you to do that, that courage that you express. And I just hope we can all take inspiration from that and do our part likewise. Thank you so, so, so much.
Thank you so much, ma'am. I appreciate it. And good to see your efforts and your dedication as well. And you have my appreciation and recognition of your efforts and more yet to come. The efforts that you have shared with us and also what's yet to come through our collaboration and more entities also to join.
We're all just getting started, right?
Absolutely.
We got to go for it.
This is a resonant path. And again, we transcend beyond the obstacles. This is transcendental path beyond the obstacles of now by living the now differently and creating a better future. And this is not some rhetoric. It had been executed successfully before, but now we need to have a higher level or the highest level of connectivity, interdependence, and connecting to self and to others by function.
What stays with me from Kareem is his insistence on harmony, even in the places literally shattered by violence. And he offered us a beautiful invitation, a global day of harmony, a time when folks around the world can pause, listen, play, and be together. So this week's peace practice is inspired by that. Let's listen to one piece of music that makes us feel at peace. It could be a symphony, a hymn, a song of protest, a piece you play yourself, a song from childhood, anything. And if you don't have access to music, you could sing or hum, or simply sit in silence and listen. As you listen, what do you notice? Does your heart swell? Does your breathing change? Do you feel more connected? I used to sing to myself as a kid and would always end up crying because I felt so connected to what I call God, a deeper life force. And then I'd love to hear from you. What is that one piece of music that brings you peace? Send us the title and a quick note about why. You can send it to contact@peacespower.org. It'd be so fun to build a Pieces Power playlist, our way of transforming division into harmony. I can't wait to listen to what we come up with. Thanks so much for joining me and see you next time. If this show speaks to you, please follow it. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Every follow, review, and share helps more people discover the show and helps spread the power of peace a little further.